From Given, this is Purposing, the podcast that lifts the lid on how to run a truly purpose-driven business. I'm Becky Willen, and with the help of leaders at some of the world's most recognized brands, I'll be demystifying this often misunderstood topic into clear, actionable advice you can use in your own business. In our final episode of the series, we're doing something a little different. Most of our conversations so far on purposing have focused on what it takes to drive change at an organizational level. But today, we hone in on something more personal: what it takes to lead that change as an individual. The role of the sustainability leader is rapidly shifting. It's no longer just about technical expertise. It's about navigating complexity, unlocking influence, and leading transformation. And while many leaders know that, actually making that shift is something else entirely. So how do you do it? To explore that, I'm joined by Arabella Ellis, co-founder of Jaya and a seasoned leadership consultant and coach. With deep expertise in clinical and organizational psychology, she helps leaders connect with purpose, expand their influence, and show up with clarity, even in the messiest of systems. In this conversation, you'll hear why influence, not technical expertise, is the defining skill for today's sustainability leaders, how to let go of the pressure to win over people and instead build trust by holding space for doubt and complexity, what it really means to engage with purpose, not just your own, but your organization's and your stakeholders. But before all that, let's go back to a vivid memory from Arabella's childhood, one that left a lasting mark on how she saw the world and her place within it.
I do remember when I was about 11, watching a TV program which said that if we carry on producing the amount of packaging, that we would drown in rubbish by whatever year it was. And I remember sitting there thinking, I'll be 18 and my life will be over. I will be drowned in rubbish.
That early awareness of our impact on the world and the instinct to understand it led Arabella to psychology and working with children and families.
I decided that rather than going into business to do HR, which was probably the only way we thought of psychology at that point, that actually I trained as a clinical psychologist because I thought I'd have real depth of understanding people. And then when I did that, what I loved was working with children and families. Because we used to say the child brings the system into therapy. I did that, but always knowing that I wanted to work in business.
She took that knowledge into the corporate world, spending 3 years at BT selling telecom solutions. Not out of passion for telco, but driven by a desire to understand how business really works.
So I worked for 3 years as a national account manager selling telecom solutions to large corporates, and what I learned was about business and about systems and about influence and about power and about formal power and informal power. And I also learned I really was not interested in telco.
Over time, Arabella learned to trust something deeper, a clear sense of what matters and where to draw the line. And when the work didn't align with her values, she stepped away.
There have been two clients that I said no to. Not good, doesn't matter what they say, just can't do that. I think fundamentally it is value-led, isn't it? That I am happiest when I'm doing things which fit with my values.
And that thread of integrity, depth, and a refusal to settle for surface-level solutions continues to run through all of her work.
I'm a psychologist, and I guess with a really strong desire to help individuals, teams, and organizations fulfill their potential, to be their best selves, to do their work. But my journey, and I think my work, it is that theme of very practical, but also psychologically deep, not superficial. You know, I think if you just do behavioral change or practical change, it doesn't stick. You have to ally it to what really is the issue, the challenge, the opportunity, and then translate it into practical.
So, Arabella, welcome to the show.
Good morning to you. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Although,
good.
I think this episode comes at a really interesting time. It's something that's very much been on my mind recently, and I think on the mind of lots of people working in sustainability, because it feels really tough at the moment. And I think most people working in the sector would agree that the role of the sustainability leader has never been more important, but it's also never been more challenging. And I think people would agree that it was already pretty tough because of the huge increase that we've seen in compliance and regulation. But on top of that, we're now facing into something of a sort of backlash against ESG, which whilst perhaps it felt like it started as a more polarized political ideology, has actually already started to reach into mainstream business. From your perspective, how are you seeing that dynamic playing out through the conversations that you're having with the leaders that you work with?
I don't think there's anybody I speak to who would say it's not important. And yet, as you absolutely say, there is a tension, and you know, how it's playing out at the moment is difficult, but the tension between, you know, what feels like a long-term challenge, how do we make the world sustainable? How do we do those right things where we're not going to see the results today, at the same time as the other pressure, which feels bigger and bigger, which is for organizations to make money in the short term. And I think most of the people I work with want both if they can. But if it feels too difficult when push comes to shove, actually they go for the short term. They go for the more selfish solution about their own income. And, you know, it's interesting, the people I work with, if you talk to them about, you know, do you have children? What would they say? They really do feel the pressure from, you know, really quite young children saying, why are you doing this? It's not okay. I think also just leaders expect to earn so much and organizations want to be so profitable, and it gets in the way, doesn't it?
I think that insight about the pressure from young children, I think actually my hypothesis is that was one of the reasons why we saw such a growth in interest and engagement around sustainability during the pandemic, because
they were at home.
You know, these senior people at home, you know, with their kids, and I guess wondering, you know, to some extent, what's it all for?
And people certainly talking about, it's the first time they've really talked to their kids about what they do, because they don't know. They go to the office, whereas when they were at home, kids were asking, well, what do you do?
Yeah.
I make money and I don't quite think about the future of the planet for you.
And I guess I was interested in your perspective on how has this happened? So from a leadership and a sort of organizational perspective, do you have any observations about what, as a community of, you know, people, leaders interested in sustainability, whether that's in their job title or not, what haven't we got right that might have contributed to this situation?
There are two thoughts that come to my mind, and it is just the same as, you know, who should own this? And, you know, this is a really complex issue. And the moment one group owns it and owns the responsibility, it allows everybody else to sit back and not worry about it. And I think the leaders of sustainability have allowed themselves to be given the task and to own it. And one of the things we talk a lot about is, you know, leadership isn't doing. Leadership is ensuring it's done. And businesses outsource the problem to sustainability leaders. And the moment you take it on for other people, they can wash their hands of it. So that's one of the things. Second thought I was thinking about is there was some brilliant work, and it's year 2000, they wrote the book Heifetz and Linsky. It's a book called Leadership on the Line, Staying Alive Through the Dangers of Leading. And what they talk about, which I think is really useful here, is the difference between, they call it technical and adaptive, which, you know, I think a clearer way is executional change. And I think there's been a lot in sustainability about what are the right things to do, how do we structure it, how do we make it right. but not the what we call transformational change, and Heifetz and Linsky call adaptive, which is knowing the right things to do isn't enough to change people's behaviors. And again, they talk about the people who have the problem need to own it, and leadership is about getting them engaged in the solution.
Yeah. And I think I think that's so interesting from a behavioral organizational perspective. And I think especially if you layer onto that the fact that a lot of people working in sustainability have really focused on acquiring and building the technical skills associated with the subject matter, not the skills associated with transformational change. And I think that's certainly one of the criticisms of sustainability teams, is that they're too technical, too far away from the business, and therefore what actually drives performance. So what should those teams do?
Well, first of all, realize both sides of that. How much are they too separate, too technical, because that's where the business finds it easier to put them. So they've allowed themselves to be put there. And how much are they there because that's easier than trying to influence, persuade, bring along, engage themselves with the complexity of it? So that would be my first thing, is identify for yourself both parts. You know, it may not be all your fault, but how much have you gone along with it because it's much easier?
So I think if sustainability teams accept that actually they can't create change and therefore impact without influencing and engaging others, what are some of the ways that sustainability leaders might approach that?
You know, the first bit is to deal and really deal with their feelings that they're feeling at the moment, whether it's shame, whether it's anger, whether it's frustration, whether it's not feeling good enough, whatever it is. Because if they're still in that emotion, they can't shift. They have to really value themselves to be able to engage properly with the right people. So there is a task of sorting out that emotion so that you're not in it, I think.
And what does that look like, Arabella? Because I think this will feel really personal for a lot of people at the moment. And there will be inevitable, understandable, you know, an emotional response to what's happening. So let's dig into that for a minute. What are some of the tools or techniques? Yeah.
Well, I think there is a fabulous, it's called the Pennebaker process. A man called James Pennebaker, who was a professor at the University of Texas. And he was a psychologist, but he used writing to help people deal with emotions. And the process, I use it with a lot of my clients who really want to get out and influence more, but are still emotionally caught. And it's a very simple process, which is you get some blank paper, and it needs to be not in a notebook because you want to rip it up and throw it away. And you can do it as a team, you can do it individually. So three steps. Step one is you take the paper, 15 minutes, somewhere where you're not going to be disturbed, and you just write down absolutely everything you're feeling about your career, your anxiety about not having a job anymore, about being made redundant, your anger at business leaders who are short-term focused, involved in the money, and whatever. You do the stream of consciousness, write it all down and allow your emotions to come to the surface. But you're doing it alone, so there's no shame. It's not an essay. It's not about grammar or punctuation or handwriting. It's just writing down everything you're feeling. And after 15 minutes, and you time it, you stop, you rip up the paper, throw it away, and carry on your life. You then come back to it the next day, and you start again. And when you get to the second day, you know, you probably begin with, I'm not quite sure what to write. I think I wrote it all down yesterday, and again, stream of consciousness. But actually, if I think about what came out of it, and you start writing those things down, and I still feel really angry about this, so you write some more, and you carry on for 15 minutes. And you're beginning to separate out the parts. At the end of 15 minutes, you rip it up and throw it away. And then the third day you come back to it. And by that point, most likely you are able to summarize. Someone I've been working with recently who's been, her role, I think is the official title, isn't it, has been made redundant. She feels like she's been made redundant. And she was in a terrible, angry, down state about it. She did the process and she got to day three and she wrote, it was inevitable. Time to move forward. And so I don't know where people will get to, but it's around, you know, they probably get to the bit of, I allowed myself to be technically caught up in it. And actually, I'm really petrified of influencing senior leaders. I don't like talking to them. They don't understand my world, but I need to do something about it. So that's a way of preparing yourself. I think that's the starting point. And that gives you clarity on both your own part and what you need to do, but also the things which aren't about you. What are you actually going to have to face into? And then as a team to talk about it and see where have they got to on it.
Yeah. Okay, so for the sustainability leader who has sort of readied themselves emotionally and is ready to engage the organization in a different kind of conversation, getting really practical, what are some of the tools or ideas that they might use or find useful, especially when it comes to winning over people who might be considered skeptical around sustainability?
So it's interesting you say winning over. I think the starting point is a real acceptance that it may not be the place or the time. And so part of that process is maybe it isn't going to work out here. Don't hold it too tightly, because actually the less tightly you hold it, the more likely you are to succeed in what you're trying to do. If you go in there trying to win over, you're going to put yourself back in that this is the right thing to do.
And the sort of moral imperative comes through.
And then people don't like that, do they? Mm. They feel pushed into a corner. I think it's the bit you said before, which is how many groups of sustainability people have really focused on their technical skill. Now it's the time to focus on your influence skill and engagement with the organization. You know, who are you doing this for? You're not doing it for yourself as the primary driver. You're doing it for the organization. Now, people often think about influence. I need to be more influential. I need to give tougher messages. Actually, what I suggest to people is there are three steps before you even get to that. The first is perspective, which is to really look widely at what's going on in the business, not in sustainability, in the business. Have you read the report and accounts? Have you talked to any shareholders? Have you talked to the salesperson, the marketing leader, someone in those businesses about what are the issues and challenges and opportunities this business is really focused on? So their world, their eyes, what matters. And the more you can broaden your perspective, the better. Because you will find in those conversations, what you're looking for is how to connect your world to their world. But if you don't really look at their world first, you're going to be a technical expert, not someone who's helpful. There's a second bit once you've got perspective, which is insight, which is actually an analytical intelligence about the unspoken, the covert, the unconscious agendas. And that, you know, either you're someone who's good at doing that, or you need to do it with other people. And the phrase I use is, if it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense. So what is it that doesn't make sense? Yeah, that it means there's something you're not understanding, then it means there's something you're not thinking about. And, you know, you're looking for those, you know, is there an LTIP about to be paid, which means that they want to maximize revenues and now's not quite the right moment, but after that it might be. Is it that, well, who knows? It's getting underneath the skin and even beginning to think about, you know, how many of them have got children who'll be saying, is this the right thing? Beginning to look beneath the surface. The next bit is to connect again the whole piece about you don't have to do this. You have to engage other people to help you do this. Who are the advisors in the business? People who you can go to and say, who is going to be easier to have this conversation with? Who can advocate for us? Who is really powerful and anti it? And how would you go about addressing them? Who are the users, the customers, who, if we could bring them into this using sales and marketing people, that we could begin to influence? And only once you've really thought through really clear what the important messages for the business are that you can connect your agenda to, do you then start thinking about influence. So that would be the first. And I think then there's the lovely 2x2, you imagine, four boxes. Psychologists can only think in four boxes, can't they? Risks,
so can management consultants.
Really, there you are. Maybe humans. Risk benefits of not doing this and doing this. And the problem, the polarization at the moment, is what the sustainability community have heard is the benefits of not doing it and the risks of doing it. And the problem is, if you try and influence with the benefits of doing it and the risks of not doing it, you just play ping pong. You have to have conversations that get the business leaders to fill in all four boxes. You know, they're absolutely right. There are some benefits of not doing the short-term cash, not being thrown out of America by Donald Trump, all of those things. But also asking them, but what are the risks of not doing it, and getting them to think about it?
Yeah. So really engaging in all sides of the argument.
And they need to think about it. And then what will come out of that is the realization that now's not the right time, or yes, but we need to change it. And that begins to get you working with rather than at your stakeholders.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think it's really interesting about actually allowing space for doubts,
yes,
to be voiced.
Aired.
Isn't something that I think people, you know, we in sustainability do enough, because we're so terrified, I think, that a doubt will turn into a no. Whereas actually, unless we allow that to happen, we won't ever fully bring people with us.
Because then if you don't acknowledge it, they don't, and you get polarization again. Yeah. And so it's together to talk about, yeah, you know, you're right, that's expensive. So what is the bit that we can do? I also think, you know, and this is, I know, very important for you, that going back to purpose is really important. Business purpose. What does this business stand for? Not what does sustainability stand for? And how do we connect to that purpose? The business leader's purpose, and that's the insight. What are they actually trying to do? Does what matters to them now? But then also your own, is your purpose to be right, or is your purpose to create as much change as this organization is willing to sustain?
Yeah, no, I think that's really insightful, and certainly in my own experience have found it useful to, or possible to, elevate a conversation about sustainability if you're talking about the bigger idea of the purpose of the organization and what success looks like. I think it allows you to be, yeah, more ambitious, more strategic, more integrated, which is exactly what I think we're all striving for in sustainability.
Yes, I remember doing some work with a beauty company who, internally, people saying it was actually about the DE&I agenda, and, you know, they absolutely won't talk about it. And so we ran a session and people were expecting, you know, this is your bias. We didn't do that at all. We were talking about, be the customer. Why might it matter to the customer that you have some awareness of diversity? And because, of course, and again, we looked at their brands, and their brands were all for white women with blonde hair, and yet, you know, over 50% of the world is not that. And so because they took a business perspective, it shifted people who thought, oh, this isn't a woke thing. This actually is a business lever.
Yeah. And this is how we're going to continue to grow.
It is. It feels like a tough time. I think Donald Trump is managing social media brilliantly, and he's silencing and he's getting messages out about everybody, nobody, generalizations. And I think most people that we encounter are less sure than that and actually would engage in conversations. But again, not by pushing, but by listening, asking questions. But again, remembering this organization might not be the right place. That's tough, but it's important, isn't it?
It is. Allowing that same doubt to, I guess, come in. Is there anything else that people could be thinking about in terms of their own resilience, you know, well-being almost right now?
I spent some time very early in my career as a salesperson, and I remember some sales training, and they talked about the easiest sales happen when you've already hit your target, because you're not holding you're holding it lightly. You might think, why is that important? I guess people need to know that they've got choices. So if you are anxious, you need to get your CV up to date. You actually need to go out and talk to the market, and not because you want to leave, not because you're definitely finding something else, but you need to know that you can, that you don't have to keep this job forever because that's the only way that you'll ever make any money. The more you free yourself up to think, actually, I could be a consultant, I could turn my hand to something else, I could actually look at my own finances and realize I'm fine. Yeah, that's another people fear. Or actually, my skills are valued and valuable out there. It's when we take away the anxiety about what if, that then we don't push so hard, we don't try so hard, we listen, and that's when we influence.
Yeah, that's so interesting, that the power of freedom and how we can put ourselves in a stronger position to have choices that will ultimately lead us to that sense of security.
You know, and it is that bit of, you're not going in there saying, I don't really care about this job, so what? You're actually going in there saying, I'm going to be direct and stay, I'm not going to push you, but I'm going to stay with, yeah, sustainability really does matter to this business. Now, whether it's the right time, but I can only say that truth if I know it doesn't matter whether you agree or not. If I'm desperate to keep you happy because I'm worried about myself, I won't do the right thing. So free up your choices.
So Arabella, you know, as a coach, you're working with leaders from, you know, all areas, but with sustainability leaders too. Do you feel a particular sense of responsibility just because this stuff really matters?
I think what matters to me is that I dig into the complexity and help people dig into the complexity. What I like, you were saying, some of the things I said were quite practical, and I do like to be practical, but what I can't stand is the simplistic answer because they don't stick. And I think that you do have to dig into the complexity to really come up with simplicity, the right thing to do, and that can be very practical. And that means helping individuals look at their own part, what's going on in the organization, what's going on in the world, thinking through who all the system and what it wants and what it's trying to do. And then my favorite work I think I've done over the years is actually, it's a program which we call Leadership Edge, but it doesn't really matter what it is. What the message I give, which is the task that you're given is somebody else's best guess at a solution to the problem. You know, you need to do sustainability. But unless you know what the problem or opportunity is, you'll come up with the wrong answers. So it's getting leaders to spend 80% of their time thinking, why is sustainability on the agenda here? What are we actually trying to do? Let's go back to really dig into that. And then you can come up with really creative and interesting ways of doing it, not cookie cutter technical solutions. And it's that bit of getting people to really dig into what is the problem or opportunity. And whether it's coaching an individual, often they've been labelled somebody who needs to change. But why? I think sustainability is such a complex area because, you know, if we think about the world, we're looking for long-term solutions quickly. And it's really easy to say, well, I'll be retired by then, someone else can do it, because it's hard. And it's really easy for the people in the roles, as you said, to own the technical thing, because the thing that's hard is engaging people in something highly complex. I don't know, I mean, it'd be really interesting to look at examples of companies who really have taken a very different approach to, and it's inside them rather than an arm of them.
So bringing it all together, I guess we've covered so many angles on the behavioral organizational psychology dimension of this. What would your best three pieces of advice be to someone who's working in sustainability who finds himself navigating these challenges in their business?
I think number one is, it's that whole thing, you are doing sustainability with, not to or for. And related to that, really focusing on why it should matter here to this business now, not what and how we do it, but why. It's the purpose agenda again. Why does this matter? Why is it important? And then focus, you know, people in this world are as technically strong as they need to be. They don't need to be stronger. It is about complete, it's the absolute other side. It's about, if you want to focus any shared development in your community, really think about influence. And influence, it's not advocating, it's about inquiring first. What's that bit of two ears and one mouth? Listen first, engage, inquire, and only then advocate.
Brilliant advice. Arabella, thank you for being such a fantastic guest on Purposing.
Pleasure.
Thanks again to Arabella. Some really powerful ideas there. So here are a few things that I've taken from the conversation. We need to learn to hold sustainability more lightly. It sounds counterintuitive when we know just how urgent these challenges are, but holding tightly to your ideas creates a moral imperative where people feel pushed into a corner. And that's really not the best starting point for change. Enable conversations in all four quadrants of the risk-benefit model, looking at taking action and not taking action, thinking about the benefits and risks of each. This means that we can allow space for doubt to be voiced. And if you don't, people will hold on to it and it will get in the way. Connecting back to the company's core purpose enables you to be more strategic. It's about starting with what the business stands for and then thinking about what role sustainability can and should play in enabling that. It helps us lean into the complexity, think long-term, and find clarity without being simplistic. I hope you've enjoyed this episode and this series. If you'd like more practical advice on building a purpose-driven business with brilliant insights from people like Arabella and everyone we've spoken to throughout season four, download the Insider's Guide to Purpose at givenagency.com/thinking.